we'll begin today's program overseas, because the fallout continues from the Israeli Parliament's decision to ban the UN Agency for Palestinians, UNRWA, from operating in Israel, Gaza and the West Bank. And there are now questions about whether this legislation can actually be put into force and whether, as Israel insists, a replacement aid agency to support millions of Palestinians can actually be found within the next 90 days. ANIRA is an aid group with a team still operating inside Gaza. Its president and CEO, Sean Carroll, joins us now from Washington, D.C. Sean, thank you very much for your time. First of all, can I just ask, if these laws are implemented, what do you think it'll mean for the situation inside Gaza?
Well, it'll be more unnecessary deaths of innocents. The situation's catastrophic. There's not enough aid going in. Basic needs are nowhere near being fulfilled. And if the largest aid agency providing humanitarian aid and services to Palestinians, not just in Gaza, but in the West Bank and Jerusalem, and of course in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon as well, but this legislation affects what happens inside Israel and in the occupied Palestinian territories occupied by Israel, it will mean more unnecessary death, which in the long run doesn't provide more security for anyone.
In the wake of this decision by the Knesset in Israel, we've been hearing that there's no replacement for UNRWA to provide aid in Gaza. Can you help to explain why for us? Because, I mean, I know that you and other organizations are still operating there.
We are, but nothing can replace UNRWA. It's far and away the largest aid organization working to the benefit of Palestinians, much larger than ANIRA. We're a fairly large U.S. NGO operating in the Palestinian territories in Lebanon and Jordan, and we do good work, and we're meeting a portion of the need, but it's nowhere near everything that's needed, and we couldn't scale up fast, and no one else could either. And I think the other question is, does that just put a target on our back? I think many people are asking, what is it that Israel has against UNRWA? And to say the U.S. State Department today has just said UNRWA is not a terrorist organization and should not be treated as such. And if they're labeling it as such, then what's to prevent Israel from labeling anyone who tries to be the replacement as such? And I think people are asking reasonably, is this about denying aid to Palestinians, which was the first reaction after October 7th, and really has not fully been let up on. The idea that Palestinians in Gaza, innocent Palestinians that are not Hamas, should not get aid, it still seems to be reflected in what's happening, because not enough aid's going in. I mean, right now, about 5% of the needed aid is going in over the past month. And so shackling any organization that's trying against difficult odds to provide humanitarian aid to try to keep children alive and have them have a better future and not one full of despair and rancor is absolutely critical. And so UNRWA is needed more than anyone else, and we're all needed to try to fill this gap in the needs.
There's a bit I want to unpack there. I want to discuss that issue you raised a moment ago of a target on your back, as you described it, in a moment. But just firstly, how closely does your organization actually work with UNRWA? I mean, will this decision affect how you get aid into Gaza?
Well, right now we're prevented by U.S. legislation from working with UNRWA. The U.S. Congress has prevented that, and there's discussion in U.S. policy circles about whether the U.S., like every other donor nation, should reverse its decision on not funding UNRWA. The Biden administration now believes that UNRWA should be funded again, but Congress needs to vote on that in the U.S. We worked closely with UNRWA at the very beginning of this. Most of the initial displaced Palestinians in Gaza went to UNRWA schools to be sheltered. And we were working with UNRWA to deliver a food aid and making sure together that it was going to the people who needed it and not being diverted to where it shouldn't be diverted. We can't work with them now, but we have a similar mandate, and that we're trying to provide aid to the most vulnerable, keep people alive. At this point, there is no education. But in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, where UNRWA operates, they are operating schools. And if that's taken away, who's going to replace that? And no one has plans to replace it because it's irreplaceable. No one believes that they really can replace it. There are other UN agencies who could pick up some of the work, but you can't overnight or even in the space of a few months turn over the entire operations. UNRWA operates 58 camps, not just in the Palestinian territories, but in the region, 58 camps and over 700 schools and over 500,000 school children every day. That can't be turned over in a matter of months. And so I believe Israel is if this legislation is not reversed, there'll be repercussions, obviously, for Palestinians. But at the end of the day, I think that is not something Israeli society wants to take on. Under international law, any occupying power has an obligation to ensure that its citizens are protected and taken care of. And so if UNRWA is not allowed to do that, then that's got to be done somehow, and it gets a whole lot harder than it already is. And humanitarians from around the world who have worked in other humanitarian crises and have come for the first time to work in the Palestinian territories, to work in Gaza in response to this, can't believe how hard it is. They say, we've never encountered a situation where it's this difficult to get aid in and get it delivered where it's supposed to be and to provide protection for humanitarian workers and health workers. I mean, UNRWA has had more than 200 of its employees killed. All of us together have had more than 300. Humanitarian workers are supposed to be, there are obligations under international humanitarian law that all belligerents protect humanitarian workers, and that is not the case in Gaza. And so, you know, if someone else tries to take over that work, are they then going to be the victim in 2 out of 3 cases of humanitarian workers being killed?
That's what I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned a moment ago, Sean, about this idea of now having a target on your back. I mean, I'm interested to get your perspective on the ongoing issue of aid worker protection in Gaza. How confident are you about the level of safety your team has been afforded there and as you say, into the future?
Well, none of us are very comfortable because coordination and deconfliction is not working as it's supposed to work. Your listeners may know that Anira lost a staff member to an Israeli strike back in March, three weeks before the World Central Kitchen killings, and those are two examples of far too many examples, and it can be excused as an accident once or twice or three times, but when it happens scores of times and more than 300 humanitarian aid workers have been killed, it obviously starts to look like a pattern, and it obviously looks like we're targeted, and our teams keep delivering every day, and some of them with a fatalistic attitude. If I die, I'm going to die delivering aid. But that's atrocious. That's inhumane. That's cruel. That's against international humanitarian law and practice and should not be the case. And at some point, and I think everyone should think, well, maybe the question is not who can replace UNRWA, but if UNRWA is not allowed to work, maybe none of us can work.
Indeed. Before I let you go, and you flagged this a moment ago, but this move by the Israeli government has been met with widespread global condemnation. There's this 90-day time frame we're hearing about now. I mean, are you holding out hope that Israel might reconsider or at least delay implementing this ban?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that when cooler heads think this through, I think the hope is everyone realizes this really, it would not serve anyone's interest, obviously, least of all the innocent Palestinian men, women, and children who rely, and it's mostly children who rely on these services, millions of patient visits a year. But also, what does that mean for Israel? What does that mean for Israel's security if a large aid organization that is providing some sustenance and hope and survivability to a population that is already damaged and traumatized and mourning and hurt, does that really serve anyone's interest to have that aid going away? So yes, I hope that the Israeli Knesset will listen to the protestations of 123 nations around the world, including most of the G7, and also its own voices within Israel and supporters of Israel and friends of Israel who say, you know, wait a minute, is this really the best thing for us as well? I would hope, just as a humanitarian, speaking as a humanitarian, I would hope that the cooler heads prevail and this is seen as something that would really not be a good move for anyone's interests.
Sean, thank you very much for joining us. Sean Carroll there, President and CEO of Anira, an aid group, with a team still operating inside Gaza. Sean was joining us there from Washington.